It's 6 o'clock, Wednesday, December 9th, and I'd like to call the Historic Preservation Committee meeting to order. First order of business is the roll call. Messler?
Here.
Kornowski?
Here.
Fowler?
Here.
Pasco?
Here.
Fredericks?
Here.
Rupp? Here. Brent Keir has tendered his resignation due to, I guess, just scheduling conflicts and too much work. We do have a replacement, however. I'll let Trevor announce that. Next order of business is to approve the minutes from October 28th. Everybody had a chance to...
We got to adopt the agenda.
Pardon?
Agenda.
Oh, I'm sorry. Good thing somebody's paying attention. Item number two, to modify or adopt the agenda. Any changes?
I move to approve.
Second.
We have a movement and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Item number three, approve minutes from October 28th, 2015. Any comments, observations, changes that anybody sees? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
Aye, second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Item number four, announcements. Trevor, you're on.
Great. So as you mentioned, Brent Keir had to resign. We do have a potential replacement. He still has to be approved by the vote board, but his name is John Horn, so looks like he could potentially be approved Tuesday night. The second announcement I had is just kind of a legislative update. There is a legislative bill being talked about right now in the state assembly, I believe. And it's an amendment. Essentially what it does is it prohibits the village from designating a structure or building as a historic landmark without receiving the owner's consent, or it prohibits a municipality from allowing that person or restricting that person to make improvements to their home. So right now we have a certificate of appropriateness, so if we were to designate a home locally, the owner would have to come before the committee to get a certificate of appropriateness if they wish to make any improvements or changes to their home. This legislation would, in effect, take away that authority. I'll keep you updated as things go. I think there's a public hearing for it tomorrow in the Capitol. But
any announcements from the committee? Trevor, I just had one question, or just a. I don't know that there's any update, but do you have any other information on the our Miramar district and the process? You know, I think, you know, through November we were going to apply for the grant, and you had sent like a timeline out to the residents, and we were copied on it back in July, you know, which kind of highlights, you know, different timeline events up through June and July of next year. So any changes or any updates on that process from that CLG grant proposal?
No changes as of yet. I did submit the application on, it was 14th, it was due. Haven't heard anything back, so.
So. Okay, I just was curious.
One thing that this potential legislation could affect as well is the federal government sponsors the CLG program for certified local government. We're able to get funds for the survey projects or the nomination projects to hire consultants to do that work. Part of the hoops, for lack of a better word, that we have to jump through in order to get that fund is adopt an ordinance that requires a landowner to go through the certificate of appropriateness process. If this legislation goes through, I don't know if the federal government will take away any funds from the day awards to the state to allocate to local municipalities. That's something that I'm trying to look into, so keep you updated on that.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else? Any other announcements? Okay, we'll go on to item number 5, public appearances.
Jim O'Rourke, 2339 Oakwood Avenue. I came here first to talk about the federal guidelines for historic districts and the Miramar district and the couple properties that were left off of it that do meet the federal guidelines. And I was asking to compare that to the Sunset Circle district, that those homes do not meet the federal guidelines, yet they were included. So you have somebody who was messing with the guidelines and giving credits to one group to the detriment of another group. And that also goes for Old Alloway. So and all the homes on Oakwood Avenue that back up to, are you there? That back up to Kellogg's Woods. So that was what I was here to talk about. I am aware of the new legislation that has been introduced down in Madison, and I don't think that the village fully understands what the implications of that are. Neither the federal government nor the state government require compulsory regulation of historic homes for Alloway or for any homes on the state or national register. It is a power grab by the State Historic Preservation Office to control the individual people within the certified local government status and the $1 million budget that they get from the federal government. And the only power, or what's euphemistically called a law with teeth, comes from the certified local government and the local control. So simply making the village voluntary instead of compulsory does not put in jeopardy the federal or the state funds, but it flies in the face of what the Historic Preservation Office has been pushing on the village since December of 2012. And I've been meeting here for 3 years fighting that. And every time I brought up an issue, the village ordinance was changed and the committee rules were changed to strengthen the state position to the detriment of the village residents. And they were told that they had to do it because of the federal law, but it's not the federal law. The federal law is all carrot. The state law is all carrot. The local law is all stick. There's no incentives on the local law to preserve it. All the tax credits come from the federal and state, and there are no penalties at the federal and state level. All of the penalties come from the local level. And that's where, for the past 10 years, the state has been pushing the local governments to get more teeth, and that was in their plan, and you can see it today, and now there's backlash against it. So I don't oppose the legislation that's down in Madison, because I think that historic preservation should be voluntary and should be part of our culture and should not be compulsory. Thanks.
Anyone else wishing to speak? Hearing none, we'll move on to item number six. Discussion of properties to consider further review of historic significance. How to pursue them and what is unique. I know over the past couple meetings we've talked about and have listed 6 or 8 or 10 different properties that were overlooked or not considered in the intensive survey that we completed a couple years ago, and it's, I believe, our opinion that they deserve some consideration at least, so that we can at least look at them and evaluate whether they have enough merit to warrant going forward with the process. But before that, we have to learn about them, I think, ourselves, so we know which ones might be the most important to pursue. And for me personally, it's just a chance to learn about some properties that I went around and took pictures today, because a couple of them I wasn't familiar with. Trevor, I think you had prepared something to start us off with this discussion.
So I first just wanted to pull up our ordinance and kind of just review the criteria that we have to look at when we're talking about locally designating a structure of voting. The first one is it has to exemplify or reflect the broad cultural, political, economic, or social history of the nation, state, or community. It has to identify with historic personages or with important events in national, state, or local history, or embody the distinguishing characteristics of the architectural type or specimen inherently valuable for the study of a period, style, method of construction, or of indigenous materials or craftsmanship, or representative of notable work of a master builder, designer, or architect who influenced his age, or have yielded or may likely to yield information important to prehistory or history. So that's just kind of the basic guidelines. This is what the National Park Service recommends using, so that's why we adopted it into our ordinance as well. Kind of went through the structures, because I'm not qualified to do intensive research on these properties, but what I can do is kind of catalog the information as it comes through. So that's what I kind of did, is I took the information that was presented at the July meeting, I believe, and just kind of put it all together in one electronic file. So there's the Greeling House, which is located at 2568 South Webster Avenue. This is kind of the information I was given. This particular home is actually eligible for the National Register, and it's actually one of the homes that we're pursuing through the grant process right now. So there is quite a bit more information on this home in the intensive survey report, and if this home is selected or to be nominated to the National Register, I'm sure we'll learn quite a bit more. The Second one going down on Webster, 2521 South Webster Avenue. This is kind of the information I was provided. I apologize for the picture I got it off Google. The foliage kind of blocks a lot of the structure. The Hagemeister House, also on Webster. Again, very limited on the information I have. Murphy Coles Estate, this is another one that's eligible for the National Register. When you're going through the process trying to select homes, individual homes, that were which ones to pursue to nominate to the National Register. The owner of this property didn't reach out to us, so that's why we didn't pursue it. So although we have in our ordinance that we have the authority to nominate something or designate something, it's been our general practice that we haven't pursued something unless, you know, the owner is totally on board. The second one is the Murphy Coles Servants Quarters. This one's on Iroquois. It has a lot of the same architectural style as the main Murphy Coles estate. And from what I understand is the reason why this one was in listed on potentially eligible homes is because of that same reason, because it mirrors a lot of the same architecture as the Murphy Coles estate. And what the National Register aims to do is highlight the biggest and best, or the property that exemplifies the best architectural style of the property represents.
Trevor, a question on that.
Sure.
That last one, does that includes, there's a structure around to the site, it's like a garage. Is that must be part of the same property?
I'm assuming so.
Yeah, well, I know it's got a separate driveway, but it's this the style is the same, mm-hmm. same roof line.
I believe it's owned by the same person.
Yeah, it looks like it's, maybe it was a stable or something at one time. It's hard to know.
Yeah, that's the information is, if we find that out, I'll just continue to update this and just, you know, have it on record.
Yeah.
It's a different owner than the Murphy Coles estate.
Different owner, yeah. But the owner owns, there's two structures on the, it appeared to be two stories. You can't see it there.
Oh, okay.
If I turned on my tablet, I'd show you one without trees because I took some this afternoon.
Oh,
and there's another building around
right.
to the side that is the same roof line, the same structure. It looks clearly that it was built for the same purpose, the same people. So. In fact, Trevor, maybe I'll send you these photographs anyway, just because I have some without trees.
That'd be great.
Communication. You can see if they're any better.
Right. No, that'd be great. Next one we're giving information on was the Wheezy House, 336 Green Avenue. The information I was provided. There's a little more information, but this is, I think, really the meat of it, what we're looking at. The other stuff is like the legal description and that sort of thing. It doesn't really apply to the necessarily to the historic significance. The Darling House, also on Green Avenue. This one, again, if you have a picture, Howard, without the foliage.
I have one without trees, leaves.
And the Brenner House, it was mentioned in the discussion, but I wasn't provided any information. So
I wasn't sure what the address was for that.
Right. I had Oakwood Avenue, but I wasn't sure where on Oakwood Avenue.
Yeah, it's right next to my mother's house. My mother's is 2525, mm-hmm. so it's...
Is it that big old...
Brown one, so
big
it's...
Big old stucco, it's just way back.
Just south of...
Yeah,
it's kind of like if you drive straight down St. Matthews, it's right at the end of St. Matthews.
Okay.
I'll show you the picture I took. You can tell me if that's the one or not. Because I took it just looking like, it looked like the only one that might have fit.
Okay.
when we're done here.
St. Matthews or Beaumont?
Pardon?
St. Matthews.
St. Matthews runs east-west, and it ends at Oakwood.
So I guess, you know, that's what I'm, at least that's the direction I believe that I received from the committee, is just kind of catalog this information and keep it on file as we obtain it. You want me to take a different direction, that's fine, but as we can talk about it more.
Is that it?
Thank you.
Yes. Okay, I have a picture of it. I'll send these to you. You could see if there are any.
Yeah, that'd be great.
You might want to, I don't know if you want to send them out to the committee members too, you know, just.
I can do that, and I can also forward this presentation as well. So.
Yeah, good. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Is that the kid's house?
I'm not sure.
Cotton Kids House, 2521 Webster.
That one I'm not familiar with.
Okay, yeah, I'm not. Well, I couldn't see the street number, and I was didn't want to block traffic, so I kept moving. So.
Do you want to show?
Oh,
Jim, that one.
Yeah. Now that it.
Yeah, that's the Cotton House. That's Joe Getchow's house now. Yeah. I have the abstract on that. So, okay. So those are all those predate the Green and Broman re-subdivision. So those were in the original City of Alloway subdivision that went bankrupt and got replanted as Green and Broman. Same guys.
But this was the picture that showed that structure to the side.
Right, exactly.
That had the same roof. Was clearly it was the same.
Right.
Yeah, okay. So we had a question for Jim. If we open a little discussion here, we should probably suspend the rules. So if in order to do that, I'd need a motion to suspend the rules so we can have a dialogue here.
A motion.
I'll second.
Motion and second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Jim, I had a question about, you sent a note out recently mentioning Green and Broman number 3 homes.
Correct.
Are those new ones that we need to add to our list, or are those the ones that we've been talking about?
Well, the Green and Broman subdivision is what's considered Old Alloway.
Okay.
That's the core of Old Alloway.
Okay.
So that's the St. Matthews neighborhood. You have Green and Broman number 3 and Green and Broman number 4. Mission Avenue is the dividing line.
Mm-hmm.
So you have one side, the north side of Mission Avenue, has history that goes back 200 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's part of Green and Broman. And then that would be the south side, but then the north side is the other subdivision. That was the Ducharme Farm. So when they platted the City of Alloway, which is where the prison is, that was supposed to be the city center, in the 1890s, following the World's Fair, and they discovered indoor plumbing and electricity, they designed a city for Alloway, and that went bankrupt, and that was going to be the City of Alloway. A couple lots were sold, and that would include the Cotton Kids House, the Wisey House, and a couple other, and just a handful of other lots were sold before they went bankrupt. And then the partners reformulated Green and Broman. They took back the property, and they redid it as a suburb, as an upscale suburb, and that's and with that upscale suburb, they took advantage of the new trolley line that they had just put in. Mm-hmm. So the electric cars, the electric train that ran through Alloway was as a direct result of suburbanization, and that's where I think that we qualify as a historic suburb. But the Green and Broman is the highest concentration of those homes from the 1890s and then reformulated. And then when the economy came back in the roaring 20s after World War I, that's when we became the very best place in Green Bay to live. And that's when you had the Murphy Coles Estate. And the Murphy Coles Estate needs to be looked at as an entire package. You have the main house, you have the garage, which is a 12-stall garage with a turntable. It's attached to the main house by a tunnel, and I believe that was the first home in Wisconsin with a 12-stall attached garage. And I looked into it further, and I wondered why he was so fascinated with automobiles. And as it turns out, the Murphy family, his uncles, had started an automobile company in Detroit in the 1890s with some guy named Henry Ford. And that company went bankrupt, and they split ways. And Mr. Ford started his own company, and the Murphy boys, his uncles, started another company that became Cadillac. So it's a fascinating story. And that 12-stall garage, even though it's had some modifications, pretty much tells the story of the upscale destination residential suburb. And that's one of our best properties. And the entire Murphy Coles Estate, from the gate, the front gate, the servants' quarters, those are the nicest service quarters probably in the country. You don't get servants' quarters built like that. So the entire Murphy Coles Estate, even though it's been infilled with other homes, should be looked at as an entire package, not just piecemeal.
You identified some borders, some boundaries, streets. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that an intensive survey did and that we would do going forward is to, if appropriate, identify other districts that could be eligible. Can you take a map and outline what a proposed district might look like? I mean, just draw a border around it and pass it on to Trevor. I mean, you're mentioning the streets and, you know,
170 Green and Broman.
Yeah.
I believe 3 and 4. The dividing line between 3 and 4 would be Webster Avenue. Mm-hmm. And so you have two sections. The larger homes, the estates, would be on the Fox River side of Webster Avenue, and that's where they were. The original parcels were supposed to be 2 to 5 acres in size. Mm-hmm. And Murphy Coles, he assembled, I believe, 4 parcels for his parcel. But it's from the Green and Broman subdivisions that's most relevant would be from 172 to Mission Road. That's the border of Green and Broman. And then the prison was also part of the old city of Alloway, but that's long gone. But Green and Broman from 172 to Mission is the boundary lines, and then it would be from the river to Webster, and then from Webster down to Libel, and then Libel on down. Mm-hmm. And as you get on the other side of Libel, you just have the farmhouses. But if you look in Green and Broman, you can still find the farmhouses that were built prior to 1920. Mm-hmm. That were on the 5-acre parcels, and then they've now all been infilled. Mm-hmm. So I'd say Alloway does have probably one of the most intact and interesting stories of suburbanization in the nation. Mm-hmm. And I've been studying this because of a problem we had in December of 2012. So I've studied it, and this is really, Alloway really does have everything that the National Park Service is looking for in a historic residential suburb. And we have a wide variety of architectural styles because we had a lot of high-quality, small builders building in town here. And that's how you got, particularly in the Green and Broman subdivision up by St. Matt's, you had a lot of different builders who would purchase maybe 3 or 4 lots at a time. In the 30s, That's when a lot of those homes were built. They didn't have a lot of money, so they built smaller versions of the mansions that they were used to building. That's why we have such high-quality properties in this area.
You had mentioned in another note that I don't have, I think, about the trolley, and you mentioned the trolley. Is that something that can be described in the context of criteria that we need to evaluate it to see if we want to go forward with, you know, is there a trolley line and if there's history behind it, and you don't have to necessarily tell us now, but you could certainly, well, you could, but you could also, if there's history about it, and if it could be viewed as something historically significant, you know, meeting the criteria that we're using for National Register of Historic Places. I don't know if it does or not, but you mentioned it, and I thought we ought to at least have it on our list of things to discuss and learn about.
Well, that's the trolley line was completely misinterpreted in the intensive survey. The survey said that the trolley line was ran out to Alloy because of massive expansion in the population, which is absolutely wrong. It went the other way around. They extended the trolley line. Initially, the trolley line ended at the cemetery at Schrader's Flowers, and then it extended out, and the village developed along nodes where the trolley stops were. So you'd have it in front of what the old Webster School, which is now CVS. That was one trolley stop, and if you look there, all those homes are on small city lots, and those are so that they could be within walking distance of the trolley stop. That's one stop, and then the other stop was down by Schrader's Flowers, and then there was another stop over by the prison. So the subdivisions, the village was designed around where the stops were for the trolleys, and if you drive Webster Avenue knowing where the trolley stops are, we still have benches there for the buses. So the buses replaced the trolleys in the 1930s. But those trolley stops are still there if you know what you're looking for. The most interesting one would be the one by Schrader's Flowers in the cemetery. Cemeteries were always the last destination on the electric trolley lines because those were our parks in the 1890s.
But the actual line isn't there, the trolley line.
Yeah, the only rail that's still visible in the village, besides for the one by Kelb, would be the one from going to the original bike and windmill factory at the prison. So you have to walk down in the state park along the trail going down to the Fox River Trail in front of the prison, and you can still see the rails are still there and the switches are still there. But that's where that was for a commercial rail. The trolley lines, as part of the approval to convert from electric rail to bus service, Wisconsin Public Service had to agree to remove the trolley lines and repair the roads. So all the trolley rails were removed, and the original trolley service is now Wisconsin Public Service, which has now just been bought out. They were sure that they needed the trolley lines were put in because they needed a reason to have electricity during the day, because we had a lot of hydropower, and trolley lines, there were no electrical appliances at the time, so the electric cars were one way to sell electricity. So that's one of the reasons why the power company got into the bus service, because they originally started out in the electric train car service.
So they did it so they'd have a customer.
So they'd have a customer base.
Yeah, customer base. Yeah.
And there was a lawsuit. The people of Alloy felt that they were being overcharged by a penny for their ride into Green Bay, more than the people in De Pere. So one gentleman filed a lawsuit, and it became a federal lawsuit over, I believe it was a penny or two on the fare. And as part of that lawsuit, they did do a survey, and they did identify all the trolley stops and all the passengers' rails at different times during the day. So that is part, it's hard to find, but that was a federal lawsuit, and the trolley line eventually went out because it wasn't profitable. And we have buses now.
Yeah. Thanks. Anybody on the commission, on the committee, have any questions for Jim since we got him here?
Just the reason that the trolley lines were important and why we still have it today is that introduced the concept of nodes instead of a central business district. So we had business nodes along Webster Avenue, and today those nodes still exist along different corridors that we have. We still have those business nodes, but now we have them on Liable Street, and then the Village Grill would be a node or more of a suburban node based along transportation corridors instead of a central business district that grew in a concentric ring system.
Thanks. Any other questions?
Yeah, I don't know if there's much question about the credibility of the historic nature of the properties that were presented to us. It's more a question of how and when are we going to move forward.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's kind another
of frame it up that way.
Point of discussion.
Yeah.
Now that we've kind of got all the items out on our short list here, we should maybe take up the rules again so we can move forward. So I'll entertain a motion.
So moved. I'll second it.
Motion and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. What we wanted to do was to talk about how to pursue this information. And one thing we've talked about just in general is that Trevor's going to keep collecting information. But the other thing we need to do is decide or make sure we understand what the process would be going forward. I mean, I think, Trevor, you suggested that we might want to consider having a consultant to evaluate these properties. And then, as a result of that, then we'd have something to put together in the form of a CLG grant proposal. Would that be the process that we follow? Or maybe we just need to clarify what...
We could follow that process. Because these properties, for the most part, aren't eligible for the National or State Register, we'd be looking at locally designating them. Mm-hmm. We can do research. We can seek to do further research on the properties. That can be funded through the CLG, but typically it's not. We kind of have a hierarchy with an intensive survey report being top priority, then nominations of National State Register being second, and then everything else is kind of way down on the list. So that is something we could pursue. I think if we were going to hire a consultant, it would be more realistic that the village would have to take on that responsibility themselves. And then maybe locally designate some of these properties. I think before all that, though, is reaching out to the property owners and getting their buy-in. I know we have the authority, at least for now, maybe not for much longer, locally designate these without the property owner's permission, but I think it would be in the community's best interest in historic preservation for the community to get the buy-in from properties that we're looking at.
I would agree. I don't know how do we... Are there differing opinions, or are we all...
Well, there's a couple of houses I'm not real familiar with, but, I mean, if they've been really remodeled, and I believe the one at, I think it's 336 Green, I mean, if it's got vinyl siding on and that, does that really, at this point, does it even pay to pursue something like that?
The intensive survey when Legacy Architecture came through and assessed the whole village was looking from street view. So I think if we had compelling reason to have them reassess for, like, they didn't research any of the maybe people that live there or
right.
Why it may be significant to the village, they were looking at it from an architectural standpoint, from the street view. So as we gain new information on the properties, that brings additional information to light that makes them more significant, the state will entertain reassessing those. But we have to bring them evidence of that to be reconsidered.
So really we should get all the information on these 8 homes. We should really try to gain as much information on each 8.
Mm-hmm. If we're basing it on who lived there or right. if it was particularly important to an industry, like he mentioned the Ford Motor Company.
Right.
I mean, that's all new information that Legacy wouldn't know from
right.
the street.
Right.
So that compiled with what Legacy assessed may give reconsideration justification from the state. I don't know how much you have to overpower. How much information do you have to overpower vinyl siding or a new
right.
garage that doesn't fit? I don't know.
Right, okay.
But, you know, the more information we can bring to the state gives them more information to judge.
Okay.
So, how are we going to collect more information?
You can ask me.
Pardon?
You can ask me.
I can ask you? Yeah, I think we would. You know.
No charge.
When I'm speaking for myself personally, I think you know a lot of information that we don't know. And
well,
we can go find out some of that, but you already know it. And so whatever you can convey to the village, to us or else, I think directly to Trevor, you know, in whatever format you want to provide it to, if you want to write something or if you want to give citing of articles, anything that can help Trevor compile information as the way the way we've been talking.
We did that during the intensive survey, though, and he couldn't provide the information
okay.
we needed.
I just want to make sure that there's everything out. I just want to make sure that the village has whatever's out there, you know, because we're looking at homes and properties that maybe weren't reviewed.
Well, with regards to the Brenner property, what I would do is currently Neville Museum has an exhibit in which the Brenner property is highlighted. So I would just simply go down to the Neville Museum and look at their exhibit because it is one that they thought was very important. The tax assessor was doing a study, was doing a reassessment of the village at the same time we were doing the intensive survey. And so the tax assessor has very good photographs and pretty good history on all of the individual properties, and those are available online. So it would probably take me the better part of a half hour to assemble the information on the 8 homes that we're talking about. One of the unique ones that kind of went by the wayside was the butterfly home on Wabener. There's only one house in Green Bay that I've seen with a butterfly roof, and it was a style that was tried in the 50s and didn't really catch on, but it's one of those unique homes that we should designate locally because there's nothing else like it in town. So those are the types of things. The stucco homes and the Brenner home, those are some of the things that we can talk about that would be that make our architecture very interesting and relevant on a national basis. The best source of information is Mike Diener's database on Alloway that he did in 2012 at the same time we were doing the intensive survey.
Thanks. Does anybody on the committee have any comments or observations or questions or suggestions for what to do going forward? So what have we decided so far? We've decided that we're going to give Trevor as much information as we can, and we're going to consider... Trevor, did you suggest that we consider a local designation for Editor?
I think for now that's really our only option, unless, like Bobby said, we were able to collect enough information that's able to kind of make the state or National Park Service kind of reconsider, take a second look at these properties.
So what I'm hearing is that, again, I'm kind of new at this still, what I'm hearing is that we can't just go through another round of survey and identify. We did one, and that has to be the basis going forward for us to, and you're nodding your head, that's true.
It's about 15 years before they'll consider redoing it again.
So, but we couldn't also then, again, I'm just clarifying for myself and maybe anybody else who knows as little as I do about it, but we can't just kind of earmark or pinpoint specific homes that were not qualified through our intensive survey and say we'd like to have another survey done just on those 8 homes or 12 properties.
We would take any new information and go to the state specifically for that property.
Mm-hmm.
We wouldn't go through another intensive survey.
Okay.
Application.
So I guess that's what I'm asking is, you know, is it feasible to do that or does that not work? We'd have to hire someone to do that for us, right? I'm just considering another way to go about getting it on the National Register rather than the local register.
Being on the local register doesn't preclude being on the state or national register, correct?
That's correct.
So would there be more, more pull or more credibility if it was locally designated after we compiled information and then go to whoever it is to try to make another push?
Yeah, that makes...
Maybe it would show a justification that we did homework.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, rather than just... Yeah, you're right. That, it makes sense, I think, to try and do that then.
Do we want to
start with something that we can that's kind of manageable, and we'll build our information base, and then we'll build credibility, and then we can decide from that point, okay, here's some really neat stuff, and we have some locally designated properties. Maybe we can, at that point, go forward to the national level. Is that what you're...
Yeah,
that's
much.
Kind of what I was thinking also. What do we think?
Also, wouldn't we want to start with what's already designated as eligible versus jumping to something that's not designated at this point?
Right, there's a number of homes that
currently
they say meet the criteria that we could pursue a grant to further develop.
One of the things that I think, and Trevor, you can speak to this, I guess, but it was my understanding that we didn't get a lot of positive feedback from the other homeowners in terms of their willingness or eagerness to go forward with it. And we found 2 properties that were, so they're included along with the Miramar district, but the others either didn't respond in a positive way. Is that true or?
That's correct. Actually, I didn't receive any negative response, so it was more just lack of response.
Okay. So would it be worth, you know, it's a separate kind of a task here, but would it be worth going back again to those, if there were 13, now there are 11, you know, with some information saying that, well, two of the 13 have said they wanted to do it, and here's what the status of the process is, here's what we're doing, and we'll give you another opportunity to participate in the next round.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe so that we don't just leave them out. Maybe they, you know, give them more information and let them know that some of the property owners in their category did move forward with the process. Would that be worth the...
I think it would be worthwhile, especially if we didn't get negative feedback.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
just a lack of response.
Yeah, yeah, as long as they didn't say, no, I don't want anything to do with it, you know, take me off your list kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
More and more of these ignored it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
any of these processes, isn't it a couple of years to go through the whole
thing? It is, yeah.
Yeah. So you're probably looking, even for these homes now, a couple more years.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes part of the problem is those homeowners don't even know if they're going to be there.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, to designate it, and then they're not the
right.
homeowner.
Yeah.
That may be why some might have been hesitant, too. I don't know.
And if they don't understand the process, they might feel that that puts them at risk of marketing their property if there's something in the works, you know.
Right.
Especially, you know, anybody who might be concerned about somebody using it as leverage to...
Yeah.
You know. I'd like to suggest that we just do another public forum in spring, like we did last year, and invite all of the potential districts and the other individually eligible property owners all to that public session and have the state come and talk about it again and see if there's enough information for next fall's granting application to move forward with maybe another district or more of the individually eligible properties.
Yeah. How do we feel about doing that? So we're kind of on two tracks now. This is one to kind of move forward with what we've already done, and the other one is to collect information
yeah.
for to start a locally designated pool of properties, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of doing two things.
Two things, yeah.
Yeah. And that's more thorough than just sending out another note,
because mm-hmm.
they might get the same response
right.
again, like, oh, no, they sent me one of these before. So.
Well, then we'll know. They don't come twice.
Yeah, yeah.
Just keep going until we get
yeah.
the negative feedback.
Yeah.
Once we get the negative feedback, we'll
yeah.
stop.
If you don't come this time, we're going to ask you again. You better. Yeah. So that way we've done everything we could to build interest and awareness and to give everybody the best opportunity to do. I mean, I live in one of these neighborhoods that Jim has cited as a Sunset, whatever.
Sunlight Park,
yeah. I mean, so I wouldn't mind if our neighborhood was designated. It wasn't identified, but if it was, I can't see why it would be a bad thing. So we have some direction, I think, now. At least we have we've identified what the title of our two different tasks are. So, what else can we do tonight? Or do we let Trevor come up with some proposals for how to move forward with our two different projects?
So they're going to be worked concurrently, though, right?
Is that what we can do them concurrently for sure.
Okay.
And I guess I'm asking, what else can we do tonight, or should we let Trevor put something together for us to present to us the next time we meet? As far as a game plan or a task list for locally designated properties, for example.
Sure. I can put together a game plan. I can also reach out to the state and see what their availability is this spring,
mm-hmm.
So that we can have another public input meeting.
I'd like to suggest May.
May?
It's Historic Preservation Month in May.
Yeah, I can.
And people have come out of their winter hibernation.
Yeah, the snow's gone.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
And that's a good way to to advertise what we're doing as if it's Historic Preservation Month, because there'll be things written about that.
But it would be good to get on the state's calendar early, because that's going to be a busy month for them, probably.
Yeah, and so that's something that we can task Trevor with doing, is lining up. Dinah Pecunius?
Yeah,
Pecunius, yeah. Or someone, you know, I mean, she certainly did a good job of coming and presenting. If we could get her back, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Okay. How does the committee feel about our progress tonight and where we are in terms of moving, you know, these things forward? Do we need to do something else, or are we? Is everybody okay with what we've decided to do and how we're going to go about? At least the next step is for Trevor to help us out a little. And in the meantime, I mean, I'm certainly going to go down to the Neville Museum and look at that one property. Mm-hmm. And so anytime, and I know the family that lives in the one with the aluminum siding, the one that is red. I know the family that lives there.
Yeah, and
so I'll talk to them.
Yeah, and because I used to be the next door neighbors of Brenner's, so I should have at my mother's house a bunch of information on Brenner House too, and I'm thinking I might have some pictures of the old candy factory in back of her house yet. So
those are all good things to have.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm going to work on that.
The more we have a context for our proposal.
Mm-hmm. Right, because the state will want specifics.
Yep.
Citations. Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter that the candy factory is not there anymore, or that, you know, it's important that...
That might play into the industry aspect of it, though.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's what I mean. It gives a context. Good. Anything else on this topic? Trevor, are you okay with... Trevor always comes away with more work after.
Yeah. No, that's okay. Job security. Right? Yeah. No, that's fine.
We're doing our best, Trevor. We're doing our best.
If that all sounds like a great
thing. Okay, good. Thank you. In that case, we'll move on to item number 7. Next meeting date, January 27th. And agenda items. Is that an okay date for everybody?
Should be.
Good. And agenda items, I think we can ask Trevor to present his timetables and information on our two projects that we're going to move forward with. Any other agenda items? Pardon?
It can be the same agenda.
It could be the same agenda.
Yeah.
More as we come up with a larger list.
Yeah. Yeah, it can be the same agenda.
Maybe we note the other 11 eligible.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. So, I guess we're ready for adjournment then. We need a motion.
I'll second.
Motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? We're adjourned. Thank you.
7 p.m.
7 p.m. I told my wife I thought I'd be home before she left for her meeting. It starts at 7:30.